Okay, good evening, everyone. We're ready to start the evening session of these hearings. And let me thank all of you for coming this evening. And as I mentioned earlier today, but I think we mostly have people here who were not here earlier today, so I'm going to give you a little bit of background about the regulation that we'll be discussing this evening. This hearing that we're holding is one of three that the agency is holding. We are holding one today at the same time as this hearing in Chicago, and another one will be held later on this week in Atlanta. And these hearings, of course, are all with respect to taking comment on our proposed emission standards, which would control mercury and other toxics from coal and oil-fired power plants. I'm Rob Brenner. I'm the director of EPA's Office of Policy Analysis and Review. I will be the chair of the hearing. And with me on the panel are Kathleen Cox, who's the Associate Director for Permits and Air Toxics in our regional office here in Philadelphia, and Tamara Saltman, who is a Senior Policy Analyst in our Office of Policy Analysis and Review in the AIR program at EPA. And we also have with us Paul Versace, who's from our General Counsel's office, also from headquarters. In mid-March, we proposed mercury and air toxic standards for coal and oil-fired power plants. And these are standards that would significantly reduce the emissions of toxics or hazardous air pollutants, as they're often called, from power plants. And these are pollutants that many are known to cause cancer, some are suspected of causing cancer and other serious health effects. And what we propose to do in addition is revise a set of clean air standards known as New Source Performance Standards. And they reduce emissions of particulate matter, sulfur dioxide, and nitrogen oxides, in this case from new coal and oil-fired power plants. So the reason for our concern in the development of these standards is that power plants emit mercury, arsenic, chromium, nickel, organic air toxics, acid gases, and a series of other harmful air pollutants. They're the largest domestic source of mercury emissions to the air, and once mercury from the air reaches the water, microorganisms in the water can change it into methylmercury, which is a highly toxic form of mercury that builds up in fish. People are primarily exposed to mercury by eating contaminated fish, and children's developing brains are especially susceptible to damage from this type of exposure. The effects include reductions in their IQ and their ability to learn. Now, as a result of this rule, we estimate that by 2016, if we were to go forward with the proposal, that these standards would prevent close to anywhere from 7,000 to 17,000 premature deaths annually, would be our projection, and they would provide a number of other health and environmental benefits. In fact, the portions of the benefits that we have the ability to quantify some of these health effects, it's very difficult to attach dollar values to. But for the ones that can be quantified, we found that there are anywhere from $60 to $140 billion in benefits annually in 2016. And those benefits are far larger than the costs that we estimate of this rule, which would be about $10.9 billion per year. Implementing these standards would also, we believe, create some very good jobs for American workers involved in building, installing, and operating the equipment, the pollution control equipment that would be needed to reduce these health-threatening emissions from power plants. Since proposing the rule, we've already begun to receive some comments. Some of them had to do with some of the data we used to develop the standards. And we have decided, based on some of that information, to do an update of the standard, which we recently announced. And it corrects a calculation error that was called to our attention. And that was an error that had to do with a small amount of the data that was used in developing the rule. And it's made a fairly small change in the standards, not one that has any appreciable difference with respect to the benefits and it doesn't change the type of pollution control strategies that will be required to meet the rule. So there's a corrected data set that is available for public review on our website, the EPA website, for this rulemaking, and also in the regulatory docket assigned to the rulemaking. Currently, there are no existing federal requirements for power plants to limit their emissions of toxic air pollutants like mercury, arsenic, and metals. And the previous administration, the Bush administration, finalized a rule to cut mercury pollution from power plants, but the D.C. Circuit, the courts, struck down the rule as illegal and required EPA to develop new standards that follow the law and the science in order to protect human health and the environment. So today, we will be accepting oral comments on all aspects of that proposal, which was done in response to the court decision, which told us that we needed to redevelop and reissue the rule. There will be written transcripts for all three of these hearings that I mentioned. They'll be available as part of the official record for the rule, and we will be considering them at EPA as we move forward to complete a final rule in mid-November of this year. We're also accepting written comments for the proposed rule, and the time period for submitting written comments is up until the 5th of July. So you have about another 5 or 6 weeks to develop written comments if you'd like to add them to the record that we'll be considering before we complete the rule. There's a handout that's available out front in the registration area that has detailed information if you want to submit written comments, and you can do it by mail, you can do it by fax, or you can do it electronically. So let me now turn to the procedures for tonight's hearing. What I'll be doing is calling the scheduled speakers to the microphones in pairs up here. And when it's your turn to speak, if you could state your name and your affiliation before you begin your testimony, and it's going to help our court reporter if you would also be willing to spell your name. In order to be fair to everyone, because I think we do have a full agenda for this evening, it'd be great if you could limit your testimony to 5 minutes each and remain at the microphone until both speakers in a pair have finished. After you finish your testimony, there may be some clarifying questions that myself or other members of the panel might want to ask you if we want to better understand some aspect of your testimony. And if in addition to the transcript that we'll be developing, you also want to include the full text of your written comments, that would be fine. They will then be included in the docket for the rule, and just give a copy of those written comments to the staff again outside at the registration table, and they'll make sure it gets into the record for the rulemaking. The timekeeping system we have up there consists of green, yellow, and red lights. When you begin speaking, the green light will come on. You'll have 5 minutes. The yellow light will signal that you have 2 minutes of those 5 minutes left to speak. And when the red light comes on, 5 minutes will have passed, and I'm going to ask you to wrap up your testimony pretty quickly after the five-minute mark. The hearing is scheduled to go until 8 o'clock this evening, but if we're not done, if there are more people waiting to speak, we will keep going until everybody who wants to speak has an opportunity to do that. If you would like to testify, but you've not yet registered, but you still want to try to participate this evening, feel free to sign up at the registration table, and we'll try to work you in to the schedule for this evening. And, of course, you do have the option, as I mentioned, of providing us with written comments between now and July 5th if you prefer to do that. For those of you who have registered to speak, we've done the best we could to accommodate your request for specific time slots, but you're going to need to be patient as we proceed through the list of speakers. We'll try not to fall behind, but that may happen. And we're going to try to adjust the schedule to keep it as close to the time frames that you asked for as we can. So I want to thank everybody for being willing to come here this evening. And let's go ahead and get started with the first two speakers tonight. The first is Al Rizzo from the American Lung Association, and Matthew Paul from Penn Environment. Please come up, gentlemen. Okay, Mr. Rizzo. Okay.
It's Dr. Albert Rizzo, American Lung Association. It's R-I-Z-Z-O. Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo, and currently the chief of the Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine Section in Christiana Care Health Systems in Delaware. I have been caring for Delawareans with lung disease for over 25 years. I've also been a longtime volunteer for the American Lung Association, and in July will become chairman of their national board of directors. The American Lung Association's mission is to save lives by improving our lung health and preventing lung disease. Vital to that mission is the need to fight for healthy air because healthy air saves lives. My patients with COPD, asthma, pulmonary fibrosis, and other chronic lung diseases already have reduced lung function, and their day-to-day activity is compromised by their disease state. Regardless of what led my patients to have their lung disease, air pollution further exposes them and impairs their breathing. Because of the distress experienced by my patients, they need to know, and they do follow their instructions most of the time, to stay indoors and limit their activities when possible on bad air days. This knowledge, however, is often trumped by things like going to work, buying groceries, and watching their children or grandchildren play sports. In my office, and what occurs typically on these bad air days throughout the country, is a rise in sick visits and trips to the emergency room with resultant increases in hospitalizations. The impact of air pollution on the quality of their lives and their families, as well as the lost productivity and missed school days, take a toll on all of us. Today I'm here to testify in strong support of the mercury and air toxic standards. These standards were first promised to my patients and the American people more than 20 years ago in the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990. It is past time to begin the cleanup. My patients, and in fact none of us, should have to breathe recognized and probable carcinogens, including formaldehyde, benzene, toluene, dioxins, furans, and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. We should not have to inhale metals or metal-like substances, including lead, arsenic, and nickel, and other heavy metals. We should not need to inhale acid gases, hydrogen chloride, and hydrogen fluoride. And we do not need to eat fish filled with mercury. No one should have to be exposed to these toxins. Earlier this year, the American Lung Association released a report, Toxic Air, the Case for Cleaning Up Coal-Fired Power Plants. The report documents the serious health impacts of these pollutants. Our report shows that more than 400 coal-fired power plants located in 46 states across the country release in excess of 386,000 tons of hazardous air pollutants into the air each year. I understand that some opponents of the proposal have been calling for the EPA not to clean up all toxic pollutants from the power plants. The American Lung Association strongly opposes any effort to weaken or delay the rule or any exemption of toxic pollutants from cleanup. The final rule must include the cleanup of acid gases, including hydrogen chloride, hydrogen fluoride, because inhaling them irritates the skin, eyes, nose, throat, and breathing passages. Metals and metalloids, including lead and arsenic and chromium and nickel, can cause cancer of the lung, bladder, kidney, and skin. Lead damages the developing nervous system and harms the ability of children to learn, remember, and behave. All these toxins can affect the nervous system, the cardiovascular system, the skin, the respiratory system, and the immune system. Dioxins and furans and the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and volatile organic compounds, including benzene and formaldehyde, are also considered probable or recognized carcinogens. And then, of course, there's mercury. Mercury, which is probably the most widely known of the toxic air pollutants, has a distinction that's been earned because of the harm it does to the brain, the nervous system, the kidneys, and the liver. But mercury's most egregious damage is to children from before they are born, causing neurologic and developmental birth defects. Reducing emissions from these hazardous air pollutants will also cut emissions of other harmful pollutants. The same equipment needed to clean up the 84 hazardous emissions also lowers other harmful air pollutants, including sulfur dioxide, fine particulate matter, and nitrogen oxides. Each of these affect the lung, causing asthma attacks and increasing the risk of emergency room and hospitalizations. Finally, cleaning up these toxins save lives. According to the EPA, cleaning up these toxic emissions will result by 2016 in annual benefits, preventing 11,000 heart attacks, preventing 120,000 asthma attacks, eliminating 12,000 hospitalizations and emergency room visits, and adding 850,000 days when people don't miss work each year. And most importantly are the 17,000 lives saved each year. Today's proposal is about saving those lives, our lives, as well as the lives of our children and their children. We implore the EPA to move ahead and finalize this rule on time by November 16, 2011. Each day of delay harms health and shortens lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Matthew Pale. That's P-A-L-E, and I'm with Penn Environment. I'm a recent college grad, so I'm glad to be jumping into this activism so early. I'd like to thank everyone that made it possible to come together today and talk about this very, very important issue. I think I can speak for everyone present when I say we all want a strong economy, and we also want to enjoy clean air and clean water. The dividing line with this balancing act, however, is how much clean air and clean water we're willing to sacrifice for economic prosperity, economic advancement. On one side, we have coal and oil companies who will naturally seek the most profit entirely possible, and that is to be expected. On the other side, however, we have the general populace, which is mostly unaware of environmental and health problems that come along with coal usage and oil usage. Now, we can choose to blame the general populace and say that, well, they should just be more informed. There's plenty of venues that they can learn and be educated. But I also think that is when we have an agency that is there to protect the environment, they're doing all they can to also preach how we should protect the environment, what kind of issues we should be dealing with, what you should look toward, you know, in terms of recycling, just general health issues, and that's really good, but it's in a lot of cases it's not enough. We also have a lack of leaders in environmental sectors. Obviously, the people here are the exception, not the rule. We have people like Penn Environment, Greenpeace, Sierra Club, and many others here that are very willing to see this kind of proposal pass forth. However, the most powerful example we can set for the community is having an agency that stands up for the general population in the face of coal and oil lobbyists. As you know, the EPA has proposed a measure that would do just this, protect the general population from harmful substances in the air and water. One of the largest perpetrators is mercury, a substance known to be extremely toxic to humans and the environment. Yet this substance is literally pumped out without end because coal and oil lobbyists fight ferociously in the name of profit to keep being able to pump this substance out unabated. EPA knows the research. Everyone here knows the research. It comes down to action now. We need improved air and water standards. We risk national health, especially amongst children, which are really our lifeblood. There's very little that is worth the health of our nation, especially coal energy, despite what the industry wants to have you understand. I urge the EPA to do the right thing and make their proposal to reduce air pollution a reality for the benefit of all. Thank you.
Thanks to both of you for coming out to testify tonight.
Thank you.
We now have Joe Parrish from the American Lung Association of New Jersey and Kendall Mackey from the National Wildlife Federation.
Hello.
Hi.
My name is Joseph R. Parrish, Jr., P-A-R-R-I-S-H. I am an Episcopal priest. I'm also a PhD medical biochemist and worked for several years for Merck and Bristol Myers in medical research. I've been a pastor, however, for the last 26 years, so it's a long time since I was actually very active scientifically. But I am one of the chief spokesmen in the religious group in New Jersey on environmental issues, since I'm a chemist. Toxicity of mercury in children is very well known. It's been documented probably many times in the past 20 years, landmark studies done in the 1990s and subsequently. Children, this is one reason why thimerosal had been removed from vaccines, because that was initial toxicity. But even after the thimerosal has been removed from vaccines, the children's syndromes that seem to be mercury-oriented have continued to increase. The most particular association seems to be with autism. I'm sorry I haven't been here to hear the other testimonies. I'm not sure if you've heard this already. But autism is apparently the number one concern at present. Through ingestion of foodstuffs, fish, et cetera, children are more and more exposed to mercury. And the latest statistic that I could find was that it's from about 25 years ago, the rate was 1 in 150 children have autism. Now it's about 1 in 100. So it's increased significantly in the past 25 or 30 years. And in spite of the reduction of the use of, or basic elimination use of thimerosal in injectable vaccines. So the question is, where does this come from? And in our area, I'm from Elizabeth, New Jersey. My church is St. John's Episcopal Church in Elizabeth, and I'm the chair of the Diocese of New Jersey Environmental Commission, which is the bottom three-fourths of the state. There was an initiative in the early 1990s to build waste incinerators in each county, 21 counties in New Jersey, which we opposed, knowing the emission issues that would be concomitant with those devices. Subsequently, five different counties did build incinerators, and we struggled to be sure they all had controls. Some of them were retrofitted, and some of them were actually put on initially. One in Rawick, which is closer to my church, was added. And it's a carbon-activated system that works relatively well. However, the rate of autism keeps going up. There's still uncertainty about what the rate of ingestion of mercury is, but it's clearly more and more prevalent the more coal we burn. Coal is, I guess, probably the most ubiquitous substance for power generation. I think it's something like 70% of the United States power, maybe 60% worldwide, comes from coal. So without coal, we would turn the lights off in here. So we cannot go without coal. We can't rely on natural gas or oil or nuclear as it stands. So we're backed up against the wall here with how to control the emissions from coal-fired steam plants. The cost, I don't know. I've heard people cite $3 a month, $7 a month, but it seems that it's not an enormous cost per consumer to control this because the cost of a child's developmental disability is fairly, very enormous. One time the EPA put a number of $5 million per life. That's if a life is lost. But I've worked with churches in Queens, New Jersey that have an autistic young adult program. They just don't get better, you know. It's just how do we cope with autism? And I guess the funding is probably in the millions of dollars just for that one facility. So, and there's many mostly untreated autistic children throughout the United States. So I think we have no choice but to try to control mercury and as tightly as we can. And I think, to me, the reasonable cost is reasonable relative to the results we're going to get.
Hi, my name is Kendall Mackey, M-A-C-K-E-Y. I'm reading testimony on behalf of Dave Ditloff from Missoula, Montana. He's one of our members. As an avid fisherman and father of three children, two of whom have asthma, I encourage the EPA to move forward with their strong proposed standards on mercury and other toxic emissions from power plants. Mercury causes a lot of concerns for anglers here in Montana, especially those of us who enjoy eating some of our catch once in a while. My state has more than 400,000 acres of lakes and 1,200 miles of streams impaired due to mercury contamination. To address this, the state of Montana issued a statewide mercury-related fish consumption advisory for walleye, pike, and lake trout in 2003. The current fish consumption guidelines now include not only these fish, but also dozens of other advisories for other fish species in specific impacted waters. As it stands now, my love of fishing, eating fresh wild trout and walleye, and my concerns regarding mercury are hard for me to reconcile. In my mind, there's nothing better than spending a day fishing with my family and then cooking up some of our catch over an open campfire in the mountains. The beauty of Montana's mountains, the togetherness of family, and the connection to our natural surroundings make these sorts of days cherished. but frankly, the potential health threats posed by mercury contamination scares me immensely, particularly considering the fact that my last child is only 1.5 years old and still nursing. So while we still go out and enjoy Montana's outdoors by fishing and making meal of our catch, we make a point of following the guidelines of Montana's mercury advisory to the letter. This is unfortunate. We shouldn't have to sacrifice one of our favorite family activities, partly because power plants don't have to catch their mercury emissions before they leave their smokestacks. Some families aren't so fortunate. My wife is a member of the Blackfeet tribe. Many Native Americans and other low-income families eat fish regularly out of necessity. Fresh-caught fish are a cheap source of protein for families, and they eat it because they can't afford beef, pork, or chicken from the supermarket. To force these families to choose between a cheap source of meat or health concerns regarding mercury is a shame. It is time for the federal government to start regulating emissions for mercury and other toxic air pollutants. Fishermen all over America expect it, and our children deserve it.
I do have a quick question, Mr. Parrish. This afternoon, we heard from a couple people who it sounded like they'd taken advantage of a Pennsylvania Sierra Club program to have their hair tested for mercury. And is there something similar to that going on in New Jersey? Is there a program such as that?
Well, did the New Jersey DEP testify here? I'm not sure.
No.
Well, okay. Lisa is from there, so yeah. She knows the statistics. When we first, in the 90s, when we were checking the lake streams and so forth in New Jersey, they did sampling. They said 1 out of 3 lake streams, creeks and so forth were contaminated with mercury. Then they, about 5 years later, they followed up. There's 100% of lake streams and rivers in New Jersey are contaminated with mercury, 100%. There is not a fish caught in the state of New Jersey that's not containing mercury. That's enormous. I mean, how can you have... We don't burn coal in New Jersey. We don't burn coal in New Jersey. We burn some garbage, but, I mean, how can New Jersey be polluting its lake streams, rivers, and so forth? It's coming from Ohio, Illinois, Pennsylvania, you name it. And they had consent agreements with northwestern New Jersey with a power plant across the line. I drove up there one time. And it rained on my car just for a brief moment, and my car was just covered with soot. I mean, they were totally, I think they finally got a consent agreement and controlled it some. But it is, everybody builds them on their eastern border, so it doesn't touch their, public. And we build, in refineries on our eastern border, but it pollutes Staten Island. So I know how that works. So we can't just keep having the states moving it to the eastern border so it just doesn't affect them. So we need to do something to regulate it. I don't see how can you people can't eat fish, and some of these vegetarians eat a lot of tuna. They're totally, I'm sure they're all toxic in mercury. So I've looked at kids. Some of our kids can't walk. I mean, your child walking is a problem. They wobble. They wobble. They should be walking by 2, and they're wobbling, this is clear to my mind, neurotoxicity. It's not hard to prove. I mean, you can't do a blood test, test the mother's hair, but it's hard to tell as easily on infants and little children. But clearly something's going wrong.
All right. Thank you.
Go ahead. That was just a brief.
Yeah. No, thank you for that. And we did have someone from New Jersey testify earlier today from the DEP, but I forgot to ask them that question.
Yeah, they can't.
So thank you.
It is a little bit reverse, unlike lead poisoning, which is not, you can't, if it's caught similarly, you can reverse some of the ravages of lead poisoning. But mercury, you have a little more time if you withdraw the infant, the child away from mercury, that is not quite as damaging neurologically. However, why is the autism rates almost doubling here in 25, 30 years. So we can't find any other, it's like eliminate everything else. Mercury still stands out, and it's definitely proven that mercury causes autistic behavior.
Okay, yeah. Thanks to both of you for testifying. Next up, we have Adam H. Cutler from the Public Health and Environmental Justice Law Clinic and Rachel Martin from the Sierra Club.
Good evening. Adam Cutler. C-U-T-L-E-R. I'm the director of the Public Health and Environmental Justice Law Clinic at the Public Interest Law Center of Philadelphia. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today concerning EPA's proposed mercury and air toxics rule, which would limit emissions of certain hazardous air pollutants from coal and oil-fired power plants. My comments today are not made on behalf of any particular client group or community. They are, however, rooted in the work I do with environmental justice communities. I will provide more detailed comments on the agency's proposal during the written comment period. The Public Health and Environmental Justice Law Project provides legal services to EJ communities in Pennsylvania, primarily in and around Philadelphia. Through the project, I work closely with communities where residents, mostly of color or poor or both, suffer disproportionately from adverse health effects associated with pollution. As EJ advocate Robert Bullard recently noted, quote, coal-fired power plants are not randomly distributed across the American landscape. All Americans do not have the same likelihood or probability of having a dirty coal plant as a neighbor. More than 68% of African Americans live within 30 miles of a coal-fired power plant, the distance within which the maximum effects of the smokestack plume are expected to occur. In comparison, 56% of whites and 39% of Latinos live in such proximity to a coal-fired power plant, end quote. Some of the EJ communities I work with, like the city of Chester or the borough of Eddystone, both in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, are located in very close proximity to coal and oil-fired power plants. Indeed, Pennsylvania power plants are the second largest emitters of toxic mercury pollution in the nation, according to my colleagues at Penn Future. Fishing advisories are in effect for every lake, river, and stream throughout the state. And a recent household health survey of the greater Philadelphia region reported that asthma rates among children in just the two communities of Chester and Eddystone exceed 36%. Our local communities, therefore, are acutely affected by the very types of pollutants that would be cut under the proposed rule. The rule proposes national standards to reduce air pollution from coal and oil-fired power plants, which emit some of the most hazardous air pollutants known, including mercury, arsenic, lead, other heavy metals, dioxin, and acid gases. Even small amounts of these extremely harmful pollutants are linked to diseases including cancer, heart disease, brain damage, birth defects, asthma attacks, and premature death. Pregnant women and their fetuses are particularly vulnerable to harm from exposure to mercury and lead. The proposed rule would, for the first time, set technology-based national emission standards for over 80 hazardous air pollutants. By final implementation, EPA projects that each year mercury and acid gas emissions could be cut by over 90%, and SO2 emissions by 55%. Further, EPA projects that each year the standards will prevent serious illnesses and health problems for thousands of Americans, including up to 17,000 premature deaths, 11,000 heart attacks, 120,000 asthma attacks, 12,000 hospital emergency room visits, and 5 million restricted activity days. The proposed rule offers unmistakable benefits to the public that on an annual basis will far outweigh, by a ratio of over 13 to 1, industry's annual cost of compliance. In contrast to other recently proposed rules, the mercury and air toxic rule does not permit emissions trading. Instead, the rule establishes national standards that must be met within the next 3 to 4 years at all covered coal and oil-fired power plants. These standards are long overdue, and the Law Center applauds the fair and equitable approach of the proposed rule. Whether regulated facilities choose to adopt already existing and cost-effective control technologies, opt to convert their facilities to natural gas, or even choose to retire their dirty facilities altogether and redirect capital investments into clean-powered, renewable sources, this rule will ensure that all communities will soon receive the benefits from significant reductions in hazardous air pollutants and co-pollutants. That said, I want to speak directly to those who would counsel for delay or who urge EPA to water down these critical new standards. Every day this rule is prevented from going into effect in its current form, you are condemning more Americans and, importantly, more of our children to death and to chronic illnesses. Although minority and poor communities are most in harm's way, every American who lives near a power plant is susceptible to mercury and other hazardous air pollutants, as well as fine particulates. And every American is susceptible to mercury in the food chain. Methylmercury does not discriminate once it bioaccumulates. With the prompt implementation of the rule, the playing field will at long last be evened, and dirty coal and oil-fired utilities will have to meet the standards that over half their industry colleagues have already invested the capital to achieve. Once the rule is finalized, these dirty facilities can no longer profit on the backs and hearts and lungs and developing brains of our most vulnerable populations. EPA must act promptly to finalize the rule so that all Americans, from vulnerable communities of color and of poverty to the most affluent suburbanites, can once and for all enjoy the hazardous air pollutant reductions that were mandated under the Clean Air Act amendments passed 21 long years ago. Thank you for the opportunity to comment, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cutler. Ms. Martin.
Hi, my name is Rachel Martin, and I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's been a long day, and there have been just incredibly moving testimony all day, a lot of really great and important facts that have been expressed, so I'll make my comments brief. With all the facts that we know about what this rule will do, the critical importance of this rule, the lives that will be saved, the health impacts that will be avoided by the passage of this one rule, the one fact that really sticks in my head and just makes me want to keep working to make sure that these protections pass is 17,000 lives saved. I don't see how anyone could I just don't even understand how anyone could say the cost is too high when we're talking about that number of lives. Even one life needlessly lost is too much, but 17,000, that's a huge number. Personally, I'm concerned that living in Pittsburgh as I do, surrounded by coal-fired power plants, and as a woman of childbearing age, that every day the food I eat, the air I breathe, the water I drink could impact and negatively affect the family that I hope to have someday. That shouldn't be the case. And so, I think that the cost of not implementing this rule is far too high, and I thank the Environmental Protection Agency for your move towards this new rule, and hope that you will continue forward with a final strong rule without delay. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thanks to both of you for testifying today. Next up, we have Captain Joel Fogel from the Sierra Club and Lynn Yeager from who's testifying as a member of the public.
Lynn Yeager, L-Y-N-N-J-A-E-G-E-R. I live in Abington Township, Pennsylvania, and I'm speaking today as a concerned grandmother. My grandson, the love of my life, is 2 years old. His mother's expecting a second baby in September. Both of them are currently subjected to preventable exposure to heavy metals from coal-burning power plants. These heavy metals, mercury, arsenic, lead, among other toxins, are very dangerous to developing nervous systems. A developing fetus, a rapidly growing baby, or a child whose brain is making important neural connections as it learns language and other basic skills is most vulnerable to the damage that they cause. Coal plants broadcast their pollution through the air. Winds can carry those toxins for many miles. When they fall to the ground, they don't go away. Instead, they're taken up in water, ingested by microorganisms, and then up the food chain by other animals. Anyone who eats wild fish in the state of Pennsylvania endangers themselves because of the bioaccumulation of these toxins, especially mercury. We have warnings not to eat wild fish in many United States because of it. Everywhere the output from the smokestack falls and mixes with water, it begins the process of bioaccumulation. This includes fields, pastures, streams, even our own backyards. There is technology to prevent the spread of heavy metals and other toxins from coal-burning power plants. Some of them are using them right now. Using these in all of the coal-burning plants would prevent many cases of learning disability, stillbirth, birth defects, and other neurological damage to our young children. And it would make our fish safe to eat again. Once the pollutants are out in the environment, it's almost impossible to completely remove them. It's safer and less costly to stop the release at the source. Sometimes the greater good means that we need to spend money up front to save money and suffering down the way. This is one of those times. I understand that the companies involved would prefer not to spend the money, but to keep it as profit for their shareholders. The current practices are irrevocably harming our children and ruining the environment. If every coal plant has to put the cleaning processes in place, no one of them will be put at disadvantage to their competitors. The small cost of doing so, considering the length of time that these technologies last and the number of people affected, which would also likely be passed on to consumers, would be well worth it in terms of reduced illness, productivity saved, and a cleaner environment. Not to mention peace of mind for those of us who are concerned for our children and our grandchildren. I strongly urge the EPA to enact these new regulations that would require the coal-burning power plants, the greatest source of heavy metal pollution, stop the metals from being disseminated in the air or released into the environment. Do this as soon as possible. We need to stop poisoning the air we breathe, the food we eat, and the nervous systems of our next generation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen of the EPA, thank you for allowing me to come here today. I'm here to put a personal face on the issue of mercury pollution. My name is Captain Joel Fogel. I'm a Merchant Marine serviceman. I'm also president of Water Watch International, an international nonprofit organization that's been around since 1970. I'm also chapter chairman of the Explorers Club, a group of scientists and explorers based here in Philadelphia internationally. And I'm here today to talk to you about some personal problems. I have a family. I have a beautiful family. I have 5 children and 8 grandchildren. I'm here to put a face on this testimony today. I'm going to pass this over to take a look at what I've got here, but the reason I'm talking about my family is because I live next to the BL England plant. I've been there for over 30 years. That's one of the largest polluters in New Jersey. And this plant has, for years and years, spewed a tremendous amount of toxins. Consequently, and a contributing factor to my own illness, which is Crohn's disease, I have problems with emphysema, asthma. My children have a variety of contributing factors, along the syndrome of autism, some very serious illnesses with Reye's disease and inability to concentrate and focus in school, attention deficit disorder. These are beautiful children. These are my children. This is my family. This is what I'm going to leave them when I go. What am I going to leave them? You know, I travel a lot. I move all over the world. My job as a captain aboard ship takes me everywhere. I'm going to pass these up to you if somebody would take these up. That's the Explorers Club. One of my trips took me to a little village once in Japan. Very impressive place. It's called Minamata. And this is a situation where in this village in the 1950s, there was a factory that was putting mercury into the water. And just to read you a couple of comments here that I jotted down, it started out simply with the strangeness of cats dancing in the street, sometimes collapsing and dying. Who would have known in a modest Japanese fishing village in the 1950s that when friends or family members occasionally shouted uncontrollably, slurred their speech, or dropped their chopsticks at dinner, that this was the early subtle symptoms of a debilitating nervous condition caused by ingesting mercury. Yet when such scattered, apparently unconnected, and mildly mysterious events began to haunt the town of Minamata, Japan, these were the first signs of the most dramatic and emotionally moving cases of industrial pollution in history. In the Japanese view of medicine, the condition of the body reflects how the individual has maintained his or her belief and balance in the external world. And sickness can be viewed sometimes as being deserved. The victims were thus implicitly blamed for their own condition and also avoided by their neighbors. Neighbor turned against neighbor. Fishermen and their families were the first to feel the effects. As one fisherman said, you know, when I was dying and my hands were numb and I couldn't work and my father was dying too, when the villagers turned against us, it was to the sea that I would go and cry. No one can understand why I love the sea so much. The sea has never abandoned me. The sea is my life. And I will tell you the same thing that Jacques Cousteau told me when I was a young man aboard the Calypso. And he said, remember, Joël, the ocean is your mother. You must protect her with your life. So I say to you today, gentlemen, ladies, please pass this most important ordinance, this most important legislation. This is my mission of being here today, to encourage you to put a face on the suffering and to let you know as captain aboard my ship, the planet Earth, I want this ocean and these waterways kept clean. Please help us. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Now we have Kate Zeiden, who is testifying as a member of the public. and Miriam Fallon from Greenpeace.
Hi there, and thanks so much for hearing my testimony. My name is Kate Zaidan, Z-A-I-D-A-N, and I'd like to testify that I'm in favor of EPA regulating mercury, acid gases, and other air toxics from coal-fired power plants. I'm a Girl Scout troop leader for a troop of about 20 young women based out of a local mosque in West Philadelphia. And in my troop, I work with the girls to develop their self-confidence, teach them about eating healthy, exercising, and pursuing their individual passions. I feel like it's not fair that my efforts, as well as the efforts of the parents and the broader religious community that they're a part of, to raise healthy young women, stand to be thwarted by the coal industry. In our troop, we talk about environmental responsibility, like recycling and conserving water, and they absorb these lessons enthusiastically. I'm constantly amazed by how committed they are to environmental causes and environmentalism. But I also work to make them aware that much of the responsibility for the health and safety of our communities lies with the industries that provide us with what we need, like energy. These resources can either be used responsibly or irresponsibly, and the coal industry has proven that without limits on poisons like mercury, lead, and arsenic, that stands to undermine much of what we're trying to educate our young people about today. As these young women grow into thriving adults, let's make sure we're protecting their health and protecting our future.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Miriam Fallon, and I am the field organizer for Greenpeace here in Philadelphia. But as you all already heard from Greenpeace earlier this morning, from Robert Gardner, our campaigner, I'd like to testify today rather just as myself, a citizen of this country and a resident here in Philadelphia. I know you guys have heard a lot of different facts and figures all day. I've been listening to a lot of the testimonies myself. So rather than repeat those, I'd like to tell you my own personal story of coal pollution. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, which by all means is a pretty dirty place, usually. But despite that, I was a totally healthy child, never had any health issues of any kind. In high school, I joined my local high school rowing team and began practicing on the south branch of the Chicago River, which rose directly by both the Fisk and Crawford coal plants. So I quickly became very involved with the team, and before I knew it, was spending anywhere from 4 to 8 hours a day rowing past these two coal plants, to the point where on cold days we would run our hands in the water when we passed the coal plants because the water was so warm. Within 6 months of starting this practice schedule, I developed a pretty severe case of athletically induced asthma, to the point where I started collapsing after races and eventually had to choose a spot on the team that was not as physically demanding. But I did keep practicing for all 4 years by those coal plants. When I graduated from high school, I moved to Iowa to go to college, and within 6 months, my asthma was gone. I don't have any definitive proof that the coal plants caused it, but it seems like a pretty big coincidence to me. Since I've moved out of that neighborhood and stopped practicing by those plants, I've never been affected by asthma again. I've stopped using an inhaler, I ride my bike every day, and I've started running again. So that's my story, and obviously I'm here in support of this rule, and I want to thank you all for proposing this rule and for fighting to regulate the pollution that is causing so much harm to our environment and to our children and to the children that are not yet born. Thank you.
And thanks to both of you for contributing to this process. Okay, we're going to hear from Christina Marie Glessner, testifying as a member of the public, and Rosa Michmia, who is also representing the public.
Hi, my name is Christina Glessner. I'm 22 years old, and I just graduated from Susquehanna University. I'm not affiliated with any group, but I came here because people really matter to me, and you know, these regulations determine the health of people, and you know, that should matter to everybody. I was surrounded by coal like my entire life. I grew up in Carbondale, Pennsylvania, which is 30 minutes north of Scranton, and we had the first underground coal mines in the nation. I played in column piles, like acres of it that we called like the Black Desert at the edge of my town. I picked coal out of my backyard and played with it. My track at my high school was like the running track was made of coal. Like, it's been around me my entire life. And because of that, we were educated about like the history of coal because, you know, it was so intrinsically a part of who we are, the very beginning of coal mining. But I actually thought that, you know, coal mining didn't happen anymore because it was such a tragic and disgusting part of our past that I just, you know, thought it was an interesting and horrible part of our past, but that it was over. And then when I went to college in central Pennsylvania, I drove by some strip mines, and I said to my dad, hey, they still coal mine? Like, that still happens? And ever since then, I've just been getting myself as educated on it as possible. And we actually have a coal plant on our campus. And for the last 2 years, I've been fighting to get rid of that coal plant to protect the health of our community. We have a really small community at my school, so like the faculty members are like friends of mine, and my friends are like family, and I volunteered at farms where, you know, I just got a great opportunity to meet like the whole surrounding community, and they're affected by that coal plant, and they're affected by the coal plants that run along the Susquehanna River. And I have a quote by Thomas Edison. He said, we are like tenant farmers chopping down the fence around our house for fuel when we should be using nature's inexhaustible sources of energy, sun, wind, and tide. I put my money on the sun and solar energy. What a source of power. I hope we don't have to wait until oil and coal run out before we tackle that. He said that in 1931. Even then, it was known that, you know, there's some problem with what we're doing using fossil fuels. And I think that, you know, it's a shame that we had to wait this long for these regulations. And I'm really happy that you guys have proposed them, and thank you so much. But I'd like to urge you to please, you know, pass them as soon as possible and don't delay. I don't think that, you know, any company can say that they didn't know that regulations like this were coming. Even my school, we have a really small school in Selins Grove, Pennsylvania, and like when I first approached them and I talked to administrators about moving off of coal, they told me that they were, you know, thinking about it for years and that they knew that it was something they would eventually have to do. And I just think that, you know, from an economic standpoint, you know, that was a problem some people brought up, that they were afraid for economic reasons about, you know, convert or about, you know, having these regulations, because some people might convert away from, you know, coal and oil, and some, you know, will just have to spend a lot of money on it. But I think it's something that has been foreseen, and that technology and improved and advanced technology is only something that will help the country. Sticking to old technology will let other countries, you know, go and find new technologies, and then where will our country be economically? So as much as, you know, it's nice to think about, you know, where we are economically and trying to stay there with these old technologies, moving past it, I mean, it is the future, and if we deny that, then we deny our country a chance at improving. So thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rosa Michna, MICHNYA. On my way up here, someone from the Sierra Club asked me to present to you this banner that the children did, and I'll do that a little bit later, but to show to you for now. Read a few of the things that they said. They didn't write all that much, but one says, I want to be healthy. This says, I'm great when you can see and breathe. This says, same for me, I want to be healthy. This says, protect the earth. Protecting the earth is very important. And finally, there's this cheerio, go in spring, but I'm always dead. So we'll give this to you in a minute.
And this was done by the children who were here today?
Apparently, yes. Since I'm a Head Start volunteer, and I'll get to that in a moment. But first of all, thank you so much for coming to Pennsylvania. We desperately need your help with our old power plants
and we're going to need you to come back again soon to hear about Marcellus Shale. But, but just to address mercury for today, the former chief advisor to the World Health Organization, Dr. Lars Freiberg, said, "There is no safe level of mercury, and no one has actually shown that there is a safe level." Environmentalist Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said, "Government scientists are acknowledging that even tiny, infinitesimal amounts of mercury in parts per billion will cause profound neurological injury in children." Perhaps even worse, a paper in the Journal of Pediatrics reported that neurological changes associated with mercury exposure result in decreased nervous system control of heart function. At higher mercury exposure levels, children were less able to maintain normal variability of the heart rate for proper oxygen supply to the body. Yet another knock to their already mercury-damaged brains and every other vital organ as well. And I think we all know what happens when the organs of the body are deprived of sufficient oxygen. The senior author of that study was from the Harvard School of Public Health's Department of Environmental Health. He also studied brain damage from prenatal and postnatal mercury exposure, which appeared to target different areas of the brain, and noted that the children in the second study had only average exposure levels, similar to the limit set by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency at the time of the study, several years ago, and 95% of them were below the limit used by the Food and Drug Administration then. Sunday's article in the Philadelphia Inquirer showed that the owners of the Mercer coal-powered plant near Trenton spent $265 million to reduce sulfur dioxide by 90%, $225 million to reduce smog-causing soot by 99%, $100 million to reduce nitrogen oxides by 95%, and were also able to reduce mercury emissions by more than 90% with just $10 million, a comparative bargain, and that even adding all these costs together, the Jersey plant remains profitable. So the technology is there, the profits are there, but Pennsylvania isn't there. And given that even the remaining emissions are still cumulative and unsafe, it's the least that any plant that continues to operate here can do. Another bargain is the $3 to $4 per month the EPA estimates the mercury rule would cost the typical customer, according to the Inquirer article. That's a very small price to pay for public health. I work for a nonprofit. I live paycheck to paycheck. I'm more than willing to pay it. And to protect the most vulnerable among us, who happen to be our nation's future. It's no secret that the damage to the brains of developing babies, children, and adolescents from mercury exposure can be profound and permanent. And physical effects, and besides physical effects, also affecting language, learning, thinking, memory, attention span, and IQs. With its air toxin spreading for hundreds of miles, a Pennsylvania plant with poor pollution controls like Homer City is creating a nation of Homer Simpsons. And not only does this take a terrible toll on the affected individuals and their families, but obviously there's a tremendous cost to society as well. And it's not as if we have so few global challenges that we can afford to continue to add to them or to waste the potential of even a single individual who could help solve them. I'm a Head Start volunteer, and I see children known to have had prenatal damage from various toxins. These kids are struggling, and they're not even in kindergarten yet. Autism and asthma are just two of the many problems they have. There's one child with such a short attention span, it's hard to imagine him ever doing well in school. When I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, we did lots of projects in school on pollution. And now, more than 40 years later, kids are still doing the same projects, coloring in their giant posters of planet Earth and so forth. To kids, cleaning up pollution is a no-brainer. Also, when I was growing up, I frequently heard a powerful slogan concerning the vital importance of a good education for all. But obviously, children with mercury-damaged brains will never take full advantage of even the best education money can buy. That slogan was, "A mind is a terrible thing to waste." It still is.
Thanks to both of you. I do want to say, while we had a panel of two members from the public, that one of the things we've been trying to do with this process here is make sure that, in addition to the stakeholder groups we often hear from, when we're doing regulations, we wanted to try to make sure we had an opportunity to hear from the public. And as was mentioned earlier, we've heard many very compelling stories today from members of the public. And thanks to everybody for being willing to turn out. The next panel is going to be Gwen Dubois and Cindy Parker, who are both from the Chesapeake Physicians for Social Responsibility. Well, why don't we do the next panel and then we'll go back to this one, okay? Okay. No problem.
May I introduce myself?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Dr. Gwen Du Bois. I'm an internist in Baltimore, Maryland, and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. Well, earlier this year, Environmental Maryland released an important national report on the current state of mercury pollution from coal-fired power plants. Maryland passed Healthy Air Act in 2006, mandating over 90% reductions by 2013. These are some of the toughest regulations in the country, and it has forced power plants in our state to adopt maximum achievable mercury pollution controls. Consequently, there are 19 states that emit more mercury than we do, and none of our coal-fired power plants made the list of the 25 worst mercury polluters. Well, the bad news is that we are downwind of heavy mercury-emitting states lacking their own tough regulations. On the top 10 list is Pennsylvania, number 2, Ohio, number 3, and West Virginia, number 4. Five of the worst 25 plants are in the country are in Pennsylvania, where when power plants emit mercury, as you all know, some will fall locally, some regionally, and some globally. While we have benefited from clearing up emissions from our own power plants, we're still subject to the mercury pollution that comes from these heavy polluters. When children and pregnant women consume fish and seafood, they will be ingesting food that is contaminated in part from the emissions of coal-fired power plants that are not regulated with maximally achievable pollution controls. While we cannot do anything about regulations in other countries other than boycotting their products, we can and should do all we can to protect our own food supply and our people as best we can. Mercury, I'm sorry, I have a thick Baltimore accent. Mercury, as we all know, is a serious neurotoxin that can damage the intellectual potential of neonates, young children, and even affect in utero exposure. And impaired intellectual development can leave a legacy of lifelong income deficit for that child and diminish the quality of life for these young victims who we have failed to protect. Now, more than 50% of domestic produced mercury comes from coal-fired power plants, as you all know, and 25% is deposited within the continental U.S. And this is what we strongly support, that the EPA proposals to more strongly regulate emissions from hazardous air pollution, as well as the criteria pollutants coming from coal-fire and oil-fired power plants, be regulated. We cannot wait for regulation control to proceed state by state and pollutant by pollutant. When we let the industry control pollutions, complaining that pollution controls are too costly, we, the public, end up paying the costs in illness and disability, premature death, in the case of mercury, lifelong loss of income. We also pay the cost of medical bills that lead to higher health care costs. We need the EPA to be free to do its job and protect our environment. Finally, as an internist, I deal with illnesses that are caused by or exacerbated by inadequate control of air pollution. Particulate matter, ozone, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxides, lead, dioxin, chromium, arsenic, mercury, leading to heart disease, arrhythmias including atrial fibrillation, strokes, asthma, bronchitis, lung cancer, breast cancer, lymphoma, infertility, endometriosis, Parkinson's, and maybe Alzheimer's. How many of these illnesses could have been prevented with better environmental regulations? The medical community needs the EPA to be able to fully regulate to the maximum achievable pollution controls. And we therefore support these changes in regulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Cindy Parker. I'm a physician, also on the faculty at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Environmental Health. I'm a public health and preventive medicine physician. I specialize in environmental health. And so when I first kind of started thinking about how to prepare, I was thinking, oh, I got to review all the studies and put together all the information. I thought, oh, no, I'm going to talk to the EPA. You guys know all this. So I think we drove up here from Baltimore because we think this is very important. And you would not believe the traffic. Well, you probably would believe the traffic on 95. But just because we wanted to lend our support. We know that when you're allowed to do what you're supposed to do, you do a really great job of it. And we just want to make sure that you have the medical community behind you supporting what you do to make these regulations as strong as possible. We know you're going to get a lot of flack from industry. They always fuss and stamp their feet, but the power plants haven't gone out of business yet, and it's unlikely that they will. So we just want to encourage you to don't cave to them. Do what's right to protect our public's health, and we support you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I do want to say we have heard from many members of the medical community today, which I've been impressed by because I know how difficult it is to break away from your practices and your teaching to do that. And I bet we've had 10 or 15 members of the medical community testify today, all of which has been very helpful. So thank you for that. Okay, next we have two more members of the public, Jeff Player and Lisa Hastings. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Jeff Player, P-L-A-Y-U-R. I'm a master builder by trade. I live with a lot of codes and regulations, and I like them because they make the playing field even for everybody. If my competitors have to follow them, I have to follow them, then it's just good business practices. I want to speak especially, I see a little gray hair on the chairman's earlobes, but I was speaking to some of the younger ones and these young ladies here because I want to put things in perspective a little bit. My grandmother lived from horse and buggy days to seeing a man land on the moon, you know? And now that I'm over a half a century old, I see that things that I thought were really, really long time ago really weren't that long ago. And we have a history with coal and oil and all these things that's really a short time frame. And we've learned to use them and get energy and all these things out of them. But it's relatively very short time in the history of mankind and the history of the world, you know. We see what they do, okay? Pollution is measurable. You have all the technical reports on that. Now, one of the worst things about getting older is to see the things that are known for a long time. We knew about what smoking did to people's lungs, and we'd get five experts to say, nah, and the other one say, yeah, huh, you know. But there was 1,000 scientists for every one scientist that knew it was bad, you know. So we know some of these things are bad, and they're measurable. We also have technology now that solves a lot of these problems, you know, fixes a lot of these problems, and you know all about those things, you know. So I'm trying to just put some perspective here. You know, there's theoretical engineering, and then there's empirical. If the beam doesn't bend a little bit, it's probably dangerous. Get off of it, you know? So I guess I'm preaching to the choir. I would say we got vast reserves of this stuff. We got a relatively short time of using it. I want to encourage you strongly to stick to your guns on this and really feel good about it. A lot of people want this stuff to happen. I kind of felt sorry for you guys living under the Cheney presidency when they wanted to try to make the EPA disappear, and they've tried to starve it and get rid of a lot of senior people and stuff through early buyouts. But I want to encourage the young people to really provide the leadership, get these regulations in effect. It makes an even playing field that everybody's got to deal with the same economics. For some of the younger people, a lot of our land-grant colleges like Rutgers and everything arose out of the Dust Bowl days. We did a lot of bad agricultural practices that destroyed things, and they couldn't get any regulations passed for the longest time until there was such a bad dust cloud that they basically kept Congress filibustered for a while to keep them all in attendance to the point that the Dust Bowl darkened D.C., and finally they did something about it, you know? So one of the things, again, is old. My son's just recently graduated college, and what surprised me is how little science education that politicians have to have, newscasters have to have, artists have to have anymore. And so it becomes those talking heads are saying one thing and these talking heads are saying another thing, you know? And every once in a while I see a real hero come on, you know? Elliot Spitzer did so much to clean up the financial business until he decided to become governor and he had a downfall. But all I'm saying is, you know, go down fighting, you know? You at the EPA, I want to encourage you strongly. You're doing great work. You were put in abeyance for the last 8 years, you know, to a large degree. And, you know, we need heroes that kind of make this stuff happen. And let's have a long life. We're going to use energy for a long time. Let's use it wisely, burn it cleanly, and even the playing field. And good luck. And do your best to educate those politicians. They don't have the technical background. So work them, work them, work them. And that's all I have to say. Good luck.
Thank you. Ms. Hastings.
Hi, my name is Lisa Hastings, and I'm here speaking for myself. I worked for the Department of Environmental Quality in Arizona for a dozen years, and I've remained pretty much both before and after that very involved with what's going on. And I'm here to strongly urge you guys to adopt and enforce the proposed national air pollution standards for mercury, air toxics, and particulates, all of them. They all need to be adopted without delay or compromise. And, you know, I had experience working in environmental quality, and I do know that polluting parties have always claimed that there's always good reason to not do it, and that new environmental standards and equipment cost too much. They claimed that the emissions controls on cars would make it so people couldn't buy cars. It's an old story. But after they're finally adopted, it doesn't work to do anything voluntarily, but once they're finally in law, they have to do it. They adapt. And I personally saw many times when, in order to comply, they would relook at their processes, come up with new efficiencies. You know, once something became standard technology, it became cheaper. Sometimes they ended up saving money. Frequently, I had businesses in Arizona that would scream and yell at me and then would end up saving money. So please don't give up. Another thing is the pollution people. And I haven't heard this lately, but I expect it to come out. There's the false claim that environmental standards and environmental protections are at odds with the economy, and they're bad for the economy, and this is simply is not true. These standards are an investment in our health and welfare, and even an investment in some of our businesses. I would love to be able to eat farm-raised fish that were farmed in Pennsylvania, but the mercury content at this point is too high. Many things that pollution is bad for the economy, and we know it's bad for our health. Unfortunately, protecting the public health, the welfare, and the viability of other businesses is not the mission of electric power plants. And for that reason, we need EPA to go through with these. And it's the only way it'll be done, and we need it.
Thank you both for coming here tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Stephen Shapiro from the Chesapeake Physicians for Social Responsibility and Hollister Knowlton from the National Council of Churches and Quaker Earth Care Ministry.
Hi, I'm Steve Shapiro. I'm actually representing both the Chesapeake Physicians for Social Responsibility and also a psychologist for social responsibility. I'm a psychologist at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, and I work with children and families. And so I want to give you that perspective. I think I imagine you've heard from some psychologists, I hope, who have come to talk about the implications of... Yeah, okay, great. So I'm actually here to talk about some of the synergistic effects, and I'll be very brief. I work with kids and families who live in poverty. They have inadequate access to resources. They live in substandard housing. They live with chaos. They go to substandard schools. They eat poorly. And add the toxicants that we're talking about here this evening that you've been apparently hearing about all day into that mix. And there's quite a bit of synergy, and there's actually quite a bit of research now that teases out. And you've heard some about the IQ reductions and developmental motor and learning disabilities, ADHD. Hyperactivity is associated with both the social and genetic factors and also the toxics that we were talking about, mercury and cadmium and some of the others from coal burning. It turns out that antisocial behavior is correlated strongly with these toxicants. And so ultimately the findings show, and I'll just read a few of them, mental retardation in emotionally disturbed children have high levels of cadmium, aluminum, and nickel in their systems. Typically, violence is associated with higher levels of mercury, arsenic, and lead in their bodies. Learning disability risks are associated with being close to air pollution facilities, including coal-fired power plants. Acting out, disturbed peer relations, and immaturity in classrooms are related to metal combinations, including mercury, arsenic, cadmium, and aluminum. These are all well-researched psychology studies. Air pollution is associated with high risk for schizophrenia, which is a fairly recent finding and has been corroborated through several studies now. And, of course, depression and anxiety are associated with all of this. And so reducing coal-related toxicants actually might have significant effects on things like mental retardation, emotionally disturbed children and adults, violence, crime and antisocial behavior, substance abuse, school failure, job failure, social relationship difficulties. And so ultimately this is not just talking about physical health. This is really a psychosocial health issue. And I'm very strongly suggesting that if you do your jobs, you'll have an effect not just on our health and well-being, but also on our psychosocial functioning for thousands of kids and families, including those with whom I work. Thanks.
Good evening. My name is Hollister Knowlton, which is a hard one to spell, H-O-L-L-I-S-T-E-R, and the last name is like knowledge, K-N-O-W-L-T-O-N. I'm a member of the Religious Society of Friends, which is more familiarly known as Quakers, the faith community to which William Penn, the founder of Philadelphia, belonged. Quakers are a relatively small denomination, but one that has had influence disproportionate to their size on such issues as abolition of slavery, women's rights, and prison reform. As a Quaker, I serve in a number of different ways, but I'm on Philadelphia Yearly Meeting's Economic and Environmental Justice Working Group. I served for 10 years on the National Quaker Earth Care Witness Board, and I'm a member of the National Council of Churches Eco-Justice Working Group. Excuse me. National Council of Churches, headquartered in New York City, represents 37 denominations and more than 45 million people around the United States. I'm here to thank EPA for formulating this ruling and to submit that the reduction of airborne mercury and other air toxics is a moral issue and it's a justice issue. As people of faith, I believe we are called to ensure justice for the most vulnerable among us and to serve as stewards of God's creation. The air toxics addressed in this rule have been shown to result in serious impacts on people. My companion here certainly illustrates that. But also on communities and on non-human species and the fragile biosphere. We believe it's unacceptable and immoral to sacrifice our children's health and their future for the sake of current consumption patterns and lifestyle choices, and that the integrity of this planet is a precious gift. Whether you believe in God or not, it is a miracle, and it is amazing that we have it. And it is our collective responsibility to take care of it. We believe it's imperative to ensure that all children have the opportunity to grow up in communities free from such environmental hazards. We base this testimony on the knowledge that coal-fired power plants are the largest source of mercury emissions, responsible for more than 50% of them. And the proposed rule, I understand, according to EPA, would reduce mercury emissions from power plants by over 90%. And as Director Brenner mentioned in his statement this morning, by 2016 would prevent up to 17,000 premature deaths. If you think about how many would be saved had we done this back when the Clean Air Act was passed, you can multiply that by five, and we're talking close to 100,000. There are other facts and figures I'm sure you have heard many, many times, but again, as people of faith, and I speak for that community, we're especially concerned about the effects of airborne mercury on low-income and vulnerable communities, people who often do not have a voice, especially on children and the unborn. Studies estimate that nearly 15% of women of childbearing age have blood mercury concentrations higher than the level considered safe for fetal development, putting as many as 630,000 newborns each year at risk for serious developmental impairment. So we're very much in support of the proposed rule. It would go a long way to protect children, communities, and the Earth's commons, the air, water, and land on which all life depends. We ask that you not weaken the standards. I'm sure you don't want to. We support you. And do not delay the release of the final rule. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
One quick thing, Dr. Shapiro. Yes. To the extent there are studies that you mentioned or information available that you want to send to us for part of the record, sure. If you're aware of them, that would be very helpful to us to have those references. That would be fine. Thank you. All right. Next, we have Georgina Shanley from the Citizens United for Renewable Energy and Stephen Benishel from the same group.
Good evening. My name is Georgina Shanley, and I want to thank you very much for your dedication and your patience and your graciousness for being here all day long and treating everybody so respectfully. It's almost like a no-brainer that we should have higher standards for the release of toxic chemicals. I don't see where anybody should have a quibble about that, but I suppose in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, or the one-eyed woman is queen, for balance. But we're here today. We come from Ocean City, New Jersey, which is about 8 miles south of Atlantic City. And we formed a group, Citizens United for Renewable Energy, after the Gulf oil spill. And that whole catastrophe was a result of lack of oversight and regulations. And we really implore you, while you have this opportunity, to enforce the highest standards to protect all of us and to protect the environment. We happen to live in the shadow of a coal plant for the last 26 years, the BL England plant. And our community, Ocean City, is ranked number 14 in mortality risk, according to the Clean Air Task Force of September of last year. So our neighboring community where the coal plant is housed gets a $6 million tax rebate for producing energy, but we get all the soot and all the mercury and all the diseases and illnesses. So there's something very strange going on there. And what we've come up against in trying to shut down this old plant. It started in the early 60s. It's one of the oldest in the whole country. What we came up against was jobs and the economy. And it only employs at this stage about 50 people right now. And we also came up against the $6 million rebate for the communities. And the communities are hurting all over. We're ranked also, the BL England plant is ranked number 5 in the state for toxic emissions. So, and 29 pounds of mercury is released every year from it. And it's, what, 1/70th of a teaspoon contaminates a 25-acre lake. And so we're all at risk. According to the Harvard Medical Study of February of this year, the public health costs related to coal are between $175 and $500 billion a year. And this coal plant is situated right on the bay. So what we have is not only the water being contaminated, the air being contaminated, we even have thermal pollution with tropical fish in that area, unique fish that are kind of specific for that temperature of water and the conditions there. So we're up against the big forces. We're up against the industry, and you're up against the industry. We need you very much, and you need us very much. And I think if we can all stick true to our principles, we, like this gentleman said previously, if we can all go down fighting, at least we'll have left a legacy without a conscience, because in the end, we really can't eat money, you know. And that's about all I have to say. Everybody else covered everything else, and thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, commissioners of the EPA. I'm Dr. Stephen Fenichel. I'm a physician, and I'm very involved with a physician's organization called Physicians for a National Health Program. And I saw it with the whole healthcare reform discussion that a politician who brought along a lot of people with lots of hopes knew as a candidate what the American people needed for healthcare reform. But when he became elected, it was off the table. It wasn't politically feasible. I really appreciate what you commissioners are up against. I understand that today the ratio was something like 84 citizens speaking for regulations on mercury emissions and a handful speaking for not having such regulations. So, and I imagine it'll be the same in the cities where the other hearings will take place. Chicago and Atlanta, I understand, are coming up as well. So that the only thing that could change what the people are hoping for in your representation of our voices will be in evidence. Otherwise, again, the sorry state of what happened with the whole healthcare issue, where there are 45,000 unnecessary deaths each year of people that don't have any health care. Until there is at least health care as a human right and not a marketplace commodity, your hearing is very important, because those people who get sickened by the toxic emissions from these plants, and there was an incredible film, a video called Burning Our Future, which showed the people in West Virginia who live under this mountaintop removal and the sludge that they get out of their tap water. And one poor man who didn't have health insurance had to take some chemotherapeutic medications out of his tap water, which was the cruelest irony of all. So I wish you strength and all of whatever it would take for you to be, as that man before said, the heroes that we all are looking for in this society, where a lot of people cynically can feel that we have the best government that money can buy. This could be a beacon of light to show that not every aspect of our government is controlled by money. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And I do want to say one thing in response. First of all, to agree with what you said in terms of the number of citizens who have been here, the extent in the Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland area, citizen activism and civic engagement is really very impressive, and we've been fortunate to have the advantage of that. And as far as this process and the ultimate decision, this is very much a transparent process. There is a website, regulations.gov, where, first of all, of course, you've heard about the testimony here, and you'll be able to see it in the docket that is at that website. You'll be able to see what was said at the other hearings. But when the comments come in by early July, they will all be available on that website also, and you'll be able to see what different people have said about the rule and then be able to compare the ultimate decision that we make to the comments we receive. So you'll be able to hold us accountable to see if we did it right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Miranda Altman and Martin Haig, who are both members of the public testifying tonight.
Hi. Thank you. I want to thank everybody for hearing all of these testimonies. My name is Miranda Altman, and I'm really here just to speak in my capacity as a private citizen and as the mom of a very wonderful little boy. My son Noah would have you know two things. First of all, he's not four. He's not four and a half. He's 4 3/4. And second of all, Mercury the planet is not bad, but Mercury the chemical is. And one of the things I've realized as a parent is that I can be profoundly careful about what foods I feed my son. I can turn off the TV and read to him for hours, which we do every day. But there is nothing in my power that I can do about the air that he breathes and about the neurological effects that it has. And for that, we rely really exclusively on our elected and governmental officials. So I wanted to really both thank the people who are here tonight and all day listening to all of these testimonies, and I really believe taking them to heart, but also to speak for the record to those elected officials who stand to vote on these matters and to say that I think everyone campaigns in the name of children and of families. And this issue is something that will leave a lasting legacy to better the lives of countless generations of children. And those children and their mothers will thank you for it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. thanks, guys, for being here. I just take that moment that everyone seems to be taking at the end of the day to say it's been a long day. Thank you for being here. I'm sure you've heard lots of repetition throughout the day, so I'll keep this brief. My name is Martin Haig. I'm 31 years old. I live in Philadelphia, and I've had cancer 2 times in my life. When I was 14, I had a grand mal seizure and discovered I had a brain tumor. Luckily, I found out early enough that I was able to stop spreading to the rest of my body. That was 4 years ago. I found out I had testicular cancer. These are just things that have happened. I'm young, and those things have happened to me at a young age, and I know that that's not typical. So I feel that my voice is unique and that I have something that you should hear about. There's no history of cancer in my family, and my doctor couldn't tell me, this is why you had this happen to you. But my environment was definitely listed as a potential reason. Things that I dealt with growing up in my environment that I had nothing, that I couldn't control anything about, very likely at least had something to do with having cancer. But that doesn't matter. What matters is The EPA has a mandate to protect me from any pollutant deemed harmful to human health. Mercury is without question harmful to human health. In fact, according to many toxicologists, there's no safe level of mercury that could be in my body. So it's hard for me to imagine why anyone would be opposed to limiting mercury coming from power plants. And there's really no acceptable reason not to implement this rule. Thousands of citizens will be saved each year from doing so. Billions of dollars in healthcare costs will be saved. I mean, I don't quite see what's saved by not implementing this rule. And it better be more than profits from, you know, polluting energy companies. That's what's stopping this from passing. And so I'd just like to conclude by asking the EPA to protect people's health and not polluters' profits. Thank you.
Thanks for coming this evening. We have one more person registered to testify, Ann Dixon, also from the public. And then if there's anyone else who has not had an opportunity to testify but would like to, if you come on up to the front row, you can follow Ann.
Ann Dixon, A-N-N-D-I-X-O-N, from Philadelphia. I'm really impressed that the panel actually looks awake after this day. it's very nice. You're not on your cell phones, you know. I really appreciate that. Let's see. So as another person said, I'm happy to testify in favor of the mercury and air toxics rule. This is a no-brainer. Of course, a rule that will curb emissions of arsenic, lead, chromium, nitrogen oxide should pass. Of course, a rule that will reduce mercury from power plants by 91% should pass. Of course, cutting sulfur dioxide emissions by 53% should happen. And other people have listed the bad health effects from these emissions. I personally know dozens of asthma sufferers. This will improve their quality of life tremendously. This also makes good economic sense. I won't repeat what's on the EPA has already said about healthcare cost savings, but I agree with that. And also, I envision companies wanting to relocate to the U.S. because of the cleaner air. And as Chief Jackson says, this rule will create green jobs.
Hello, my name is Jay Fabricant. F-A-B-R-I-K-A-N-T. I have no prepared remarks. I didn't mean to claim the last spot. Maybe it's not. But I studied human ecology at Rutgers Cook College. I graduated in 1994, and we studied environmental policy. And at that time, there wasn't too many jobs available, and I applied to the EPA. There was nothing available, and so I got a job in the financial community where I've been working for the last 15 years. And that's become my career, and now I'm trying to get back into the world that I studied. And so I started reaching out and got involved in the Sierra Club, and now I find myself up here talking to you, which is pretty great. I grew up in Central Jersey, and turns out a guy my age died of brain cancer. My father died 2 years ago of oral cancer. He was not a smoker. Both of her parents died by the time she was 25 years old. We have an unknown cancer cluster in New Jersey. As I've gotten older, you could, as someone else said, you know, time doesn't seem so long, right? We grew up three or four miles from a Superfund site. I felt really motivated. I studied human ecology in school, tried to do something about this, applied to the EPA, couldn't get a job. So here we are now, and it's amazing to sort of study and look back at the issues, and everything is almost the same, and so it moves so incredibly slow. how is it that we didn't do something like you're proposing 15 years ago or 10 years ago? In the 70s, they passed the Clean Air Act. Huge public support, huge fighting and battles, and you guys are going to come up against the folks screaming, is it jobs or the economy? How long has that argument been around for? That's been around a long time. It was around 20 years ago when I was in college. Emission standards, cap and trade, you know, the Chicago Climate Exchange. We're trying things. The Kyoto Protocols in Europe. I've been living in Paris for the last 6 months. They hand out one plastic bag to you at the grocery store. You go to Walmart, here everything's double bagged. What's going on? There's just an article in the New York Times about the disintegration of plastic in the oceans and the sludge it's creating. We're moving too slow. You know, we're moving too slow. So stand up to these guys, you know, pass this thing. I'm going to definitely be following the issue, do some writing on it, possibly get more involved, and try to get lots of other people involved too, because as you've heard from everybody here, it's people are getting sicker, and we have solutions. So good luck. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, I think we've heard from roughly 100 people today, and we have been incredibly fortunate to be able to get the type of perspectives we received, as I've alluded to a couple times today. It's not the typical set of comments that we will get on a rulemaking that we do, especially one as complicated in some ways as this one is, but we also heard from a number of people what kind of impacts this rule would have on their lives and why it's important to them. And we can't thank you enough for being willing to take the time to prepare some very thoughtful testimony and to make your way here to deliver it. So thank you for that, and good night.